Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Arseholics podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. I'm Myers, not your usual host, but our usual host is here with us. Hey, boys, Raj Aranan, how's it going?
All right.
Good, mate. Did you forget at the beginning that you were hosting? There was like that little bit of pause when we went live.
Yeah, and so, I was like... unfamiliar territory for me now, mate. Yeah, since you've taken over. All right, good to have you boys here on a Sunday night, reflecting back on what's been a pretty massive weekend in terms of football, in terms of Premier League. Arsenal are now back at the top of the table. First time, I think, in, since Christmas, around, I think we were top at Christmas, and then we sort of obviously had a few bad results around December or the end of December. And also we've been flying this year and we're finally now back at the top. We'll see how long it's going to last for, but... yeah, 8 wins in 8, most wins, I think, in the league. I think we've got the best goal difference as well by 6 or 7 goals. And on this fantastic winning run, how are you boys feeling about it?
It feels good, man. It feels good. Honestly, just watching Liverpool City today. Yeah, usually like we watch these games and you see like how far ahead these guys actually are. And then like the game finishes and you're just like, oh, we're above both of them. That's just a very, very good feeling. No, it does feel good, man. Honestly, it's we've just come so far. There's some of the stuff we've been saying every week now for the last couple of weeks, which is the team just looks a bit more, there's just a bit more to it now. There's just more strength, more pace, more technical ability, more resilience. Everything is there, and it's looking good.
Another year's experience as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think we really are benefiting from being kind of regarded as the third favourite in a three-horse race. And I think the longer that I can go on for, the better, to be honest, personally. Like, I feel like that... last season, so much the spotlight was on us, like, you know, partly because we were leading, and it was, you know, it wasn't like it was even just because it was a two-horse race. It was because we were leading for so long. But I think we're really benefiting from the fact that everyone's talking about, you know, the Klopp's final season, and, you know, like today's game, the build-up that was kind of be the last time they play each other in the league, and it was, you know, all of that. And it's really, it still feels like it's more of a debate about which of those two are going to win it. And, oh, do Arsenal have a chance? Do you know what I mean? It's that. So, yeah, I'm quite enjoying that whole landscape being what it is at the moment.
Why do you think, like, just watching it today, everyone was like, oh, it's still Liverpool City, Liverpool City, Liverpool City. And then like, they just cut to the table and we're top. What do you think it is about the rest of like the mainstream football media, like Sky, BT and all that, who seem to still think it will be one of Liverpool and City?
Do you know, I mean, like Raj was saying, I don't mind it. I don't think any of us mind it, to be honest, especially after what happened last season. But I think it's kind of, I think with what's happened over the last, 6-7 years with this whole Klopp and Pep rivalry, or at least that, you know, it's been those two teams, their two teams that have been top for that period of time. I think it's kind of understandable because we've just not done it yet. And I think also there's still a very, very long, it feels like we are obviously approaching the end of the season, but there's still so much football to go. There's like, there's basically half the points we've accumulated so far. There's still that to up for grabs. And maybe it's not so much people, I don't think anyone thinks, I think Arsenal are respected in the sense, I think people think of us as a serious team. I think most pundits put us in the chat for the title, but I can kind of understand why a lot of people just feel like City will eventually win it. I still personally think it will be City, unfortunately, but yeah, maybe it's just based on kind of recent history and these two teams, especially City, really, have just sort of been there and done it. And Arsenal are kind of the young pretenders. And now it is about, can we last the pace? Can we be there going into the final weeks? And, you know, and I think also that challenge at the Etihad in a couple of weeks is probably a big determining factor, because if we go and do what we did there last season, which I don't think we will, I think it's going to be a very different game and hopefully a very different result. But if that happens again, I don't know if we come back from that, like a bad defeat at the Etihad. And maybe people are waiting to see what happens there, because that feels like that is... It may be a bit harsh on this team because we've been really good against the top teams this season, but maybe that is the sort of the challenge that awaits us and people are waiting to see how we react.
So before, there's a lot of the season left as well. I think that's probably partly it as well. There's so much left. It sometimes doesn't feel that way. I think there's 10 Premier League games left, but then I'm thinking about the other competitions as well. Right. I mean, there's potentially, I mean, for us, let's just say we made it to the Champions League final. That's six more games. Right, six more Champions League games, right? But I mean, hypothetically, it's like, yeah. Sorry, it's not okay. Let me rephrase the whole point of that. It's not even if it's just about us. It's just that, you know, there is a lot more of the football calendar to go, whether we're involved, whether City involved, whatever. There's still the FA Cup games. You know, they were talking on punditry today. You know, there's a good chance that City and Liverpool play each other again in the FA Cup at some point this season. There's a chance that City and Arsenal play each other in the Champions League. Do you know what I mean? There's it feels like there's so many more twists that this could take. With those fixtures comes, you know, the current fixture list gets distorted as well, right? It, you know, there's fixtures that will be rearranged. There's a lot that can still happen, I think. So I don't know. For that reason, I wonder whether, I mean, this is just circling back to your question, Aaron, and I wonder whether that's just what it is, where people are just going with all of that still to kind of be figured out. Do you just point to the teams that have been there and done that, basically, you know, and the managers that have navigated it before? Maybe that's as simple as it is.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Let's talk about the game yesterday. A lot to talk about. And there's a few performances and specific players that I definitely want to get your views on. I think there's one player that we're really keen to get into. But look, we got the 3 points, and it was very, very different to what we've seen from Arsenal for the majority of 2024 in terms of it wasn't a walkover. And we ended up having to win it very, very late on. But what were your thoughts on just the performance in general, guys? And I guess what I'm most interested in hearing about is, like I said, it wasn't a 3-0, a 4-0, a 5-0. We didn't get that goal fest that I feel like we've kind of become a bit accustomed to. And I think a lot of people turned up at the Emirates yesterday expecting another goal fest, considering Brentford are probably not the best team. And obviously it was a bit of a tighter game. From where, you know, what I saw, we still dominated and we were still by far the better team and we deserved the win. But obviously in terms of us actually kind of getting over the line, it was a bit tougher. Why do you guys think that was, and what was your sort of take just from the performance in general?
I think to some extent, if Arsenal were going to be in the same sort of free-flowing form as we had been in the last couple of games, there's very little that Brentford could have done to stop us. So I think there was always going to be a little bit of reliance on just us having a day where it wasn't as elite as it's been for the last few days. And I think that there was an element of that sharpness in the final third, which just was a little bit off on Saturday, just a tiny bit off. But I think that was enough for Brentford to execute a game plan to a decent level. Like I was quite impressed in the sense that they obviously had a lot of problems that they had to work with, right? They didn't have their starting back four, so they had to move to a back three, and it was all a little bit makeshift. But I think what they did quite well was they're the first team since we played Porto to look at what Porto did and just think, are there things that we can copy from that? And one of the things, I think they just made it really difficult for us. Like the ball was out of play for so much of the game, little fouls, little shithousery, that kind of thing. I think they did those things really, really well. And then I think that just contributed to us not being kind of completely, as sharp as we've been in recent games. I don't know what you think, Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in two minds about it, right? Because you're right. I think second half, especially at 1-1, I think they kind of felt like they had a bit of a chance of getting something out of the game. And then it was like, okay, we've just got to survive this now. We can try and take a point, maybe try and nick a goal on the counter, but we were too good defensively to really worry about that too much. But I think the first half generally we were dominant, I felt. And I felt a different day, you know, we take some of these chances. I felt like, you know, there are a couple of big chances that we potentially should have scored. Like the Havertz one was the big one. There was a Havertz one, right? I'm getting confused with that. And then, because he had one against Newcastle as well, right?
It's funny because I missed both of those. So, you know, I might just call you out and say, pretend that those things never happened. But
anyway, yeah. So that was a Havertz one. And then I felt like there were a lot of times where we got in kind of in front of the back four or even had opportunities to get in behind, but we didn't really have the execution or the final pass wasn't there. And I did feel, and you know, it's very typical to say this because the player's not there, but this was a game that Martinelli would have really enjoyed, where there was just a bit more space and the ability to get in behind with a bit more direct running. And I think he would have had some fun. I genuinely think that, yeah, we went 1-0 up. We looked confident. We looked really comfortable. Probably could have got a second. And then, you know, if we go in at 2-0 up at half time, then actually the second half is very different. But look, these big moments, and I'm sure we're about to go and talk about this next, Mies, but yeah, the Ramsdale error, like, it changes the whole game. It might not change the pattern of play. It might not change everything else, but it changed the psychology of the game a bit more, where all of a sudden, like, I was thinking, oh man, like, we've actually got a game here now. Like, we were saying at halftime, this is a really big second half for us now. We haven't had to say that in about three or four games because we've been like two or three goals up going into halftime with the last couple of games. But this time we actually had to go out and do something really big in that second half. But yeah, I genuinely feel that on another day, we probably would have been comfortable. But look, we're not going to win every game 5 or 6-0. Like, we're going to have to work. And Brentford, they're no mugs, right? Their position on the table, I think, is down to a lot of defensive injuries. And like, they lost Mbeumo for a while. But I think they're actually quite a decent little team. And I don't know why they played the football they did in that second half. Maybe, like you said, Raj, they just tried to copy what Porto have done. But they're a good team. But I think in the second half, they very much turned into Burnley.
I completely agree. And just on the Martinelli point, because Russ in the comments, and thanks for tuning in, Russ, has dropped a question or point here, sorry, about Trossard's I'm laughing reading this out. Trossard's little legs couldn't get him in on goal from the Ramsdale pass. Martinelli, I think, would have got a shot off. And it's a really good point you made about Martinelli as well, Aaron, and because we've got able deputies. You know, you think Jesus was on the bench, he could have come in, and, you know, Reece Nelson played some minutes. But it does feel like, especially when I was looking at, I think it was the first half, seeing how Brentford were sort of shaping up defensively. They had five across the back, three in front of them. And Trossard is obviously a player that likes to come inside. He likes to kind of fill those pockets. And, you know, he doesn't stay on the touchline like Martinelli does. And I think when you've got Martinelli and Saka on both wings or both sides, you do spread the defence, you do stretch the defence. And I think with Trossard naturally coming inside a bit more, you lose that a little bit. I completely agree and kind of get where you're coming from on the Martinelli point and where we missed him. And apparently he may not be back for Porto as well, which is quite interesting, but we can get onto Porto later. Any thoughts, Raj?
I was just going to say, it's probably an annoying injury, isn't it? Because it sounds like one of those things that probably isn't actually that bad, but a cut is a cut at the end of the day. A cut in your foot, which is stitched up, is still, if it's not, it's on your foot, so you're going to be kicking the ball. It's going to hurt, right?
Well, apparently it's a very deep, there was a tweet out, I can't remember who it was from, may not be a legitimate source, but the term used was a deep laceration and bruising to the bone. So obviously it's a bad one. And apparently should be back for City, but it's like a 2-week recovery. So, and just on Ramsdale and the 1-1 and like you said, Aaron, and going in at halftime at 1-1, like, it's quite interesting the reaction to this and the reaction to this mistake, because I don't know about you guys, and I know, like, while the game was going on, you obviously, like, initial reaction is we're all pissed off and angry and upset. I was extremely pissed off. But I think the reaction after I guess just on Twitter and reaction afterwards and some of the punditry was, it was very much like, oh, I feel really sorry for him. I feel really sorry for Ramsdale. And like, look, don't get me wrong, I love Aaron Ramsdale. I think every Arsenal fan fell in love with Aaron Ramsdale a couple of seasons ago. And a lot of people questioned why Raya came in, but I don't think those questions are being asked anymore. Definitely not by the majority of the fan base, I would say. But this whole kind of like sympathy thing really wound me up, to be honest. Like, and I think Raj, maybe you're with me on this, but I just don't understand how you can feel sorry, show sympathy. Like, we're in a title race at the end of the day, right? He's only had to come in for one game or two games this season since he lost his number one shirt. He's had to come in for two league games this season. And, you know, for him, from a personal perspective, and I guess from a kind of career perspective, he is his opportunity to basically put himself in the spotlight in a good way. And I guess basically what I'm trying to say is he's probably going to be on the move in the summer. He needs to attract as many kind of suitors as possible. What I just can't get my head around is how is he still making the same mistakes that he was making 12 months ago or whatever. And like, I can't, the thing that wound me up the most was just like the reaction to it. I personally think he should have got a lot more criticism than what he has. I think people have just kind of brushed off, be like, oh, he's just come back for one game. He's a bit rusty, you know, he's not fresh, he's not played. And it's like, what, I mean, look, don't get me wrong. In the second half, he made two unbelievable saves, especially the Tony one. Unbelievable. And whether Raya makes those saves or not, whatever, like you can question that until the cows come home. But ultimately that mistake he made is criminal. It's absolutely criminal. And I was just really wound up by the reaction, because I don't understand how people are so kind of sympathetic when
I think
that could have potentially cost us 2 points.
Yeah, look, I mean, look, the result obviously changes the reaction a bit, right? If we had drawn that 1-1, I think the reaction from the fan base and the media might have been a bit different. It's easy to be nice to a player when you've won, right? But look, I did say at halftime I felt very sorry for him. I think the way I look at it, right, is a couple of things, right? Which is, he is like, he's obviously not a bad goalkeeper. Like, we all know that. He's not terrible. But he's come in for this one game and he's thrown into, you know, peak title race, and he's under pressure. And I think that error is one of those where I think it could happen to anyone. Like, it could happen to Raya. It could happen. Like, it's dumb. I don't know. Like, you might
when
say
it happens, like, when it happens so many times to the same.
Has Ramsdale done that?
Like, well, that many times? I mean, I'm not specifically that mistake, but yeah. I just mean in general, like, I think he makes way too many mistakes. Like, I think now that whole Raya versus Ramsdale debate's put to bed. I think now there's no question about, obviously there's no question about who's our number one, but I think if any fan is asking for Ramsdale to come back, or has been, is now, like, that is purely based on like sentimental reasons. There's no other reason that you can say, because there's like, I mean, like last season there was a match, I can't remember who it was, last season or season before last, where a pigeon came onto the pitch and Ramsdale's looking at the pigeon and don't they score. I think, I'm pretty sure, like, was it Southampton? Was it?
I remember what there was a quote where he basically said, I can't concentrate for a whole
like,
I mean, game.
Like I said,
that was a dangerous cut. I can remember when he said that.
I'm not hating on the guy. I love him, and like, he's a very likable player. I love kind of like when he came in for us and kind of what he did for us in that, you know, that period that we, you know, he was fantastic, and he's a very, very good goalkeeper and a very young goalkeeper as well. So you can forgive him. But I just think, you know, he came in last night with a, like, just like, I don't know, how do you put it? Just don't do any dumb shit. Like, that's it. And he did dumb shit. And it's like, I just can't really get my head around that.
You know what? I think it's just, He seems to have this thing where he's obviously nervous, and when he's nervous, he tries to compensate by being extra chill, because it's almost like one of these things. Like, you sort of made the point that he's young, and yeah, you're right, he is pretty young, I think it's, there's something that's a little bit childish, I think, in how he kind of approaches some of this stuff mentally. This example, right, what happened in this game, you know, this was a case where he just took too long on the ball. And it wasn't a case where it was a difficult situation and, you know, wasn't sure which pass. There was actually a couple of really like straightforward passes on. And he just took a little bit too long, where you sort of think, when you're in a situation like this, surely he must have just been thinking coming into this game, just don't do anything dumb. Yeah. It's kind of like what you're saying was just don't do anything. And the best way to not do anything dumb is just do all the basic things that are just not going to get you in any trouble. And that example there was just him being extra chill to that millisecond where it's just too dangerous in the Premier League. And it was like one of my mates said this, I think it summed it up quite well, even though it's one of those things that you can't really, it doesn't really explain it, but it kind of hits the nail on the head, where he's like, the only goalkeeper who could have made that mistake in that situation is Aaron Ramsdale. Like, he's the only guy. What I mean is, with all of the context, right? With all of the context of, this is probably going to be your last game for Arsenal, you know, like just title race, like just don't do anything dumb, like whatever. The only guy who could have gone, do you know what? I'm going to be extra chill because I want to exude that, you know, because I'm not nervous. I want to show when I'm not nervous is him. Right. And I get what you mean, Aaron. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, like I think one of Rea's first games was Man City, I want to say, like when we played at home at Man City, and he did a similar thing where like he kind of, I think, tried to make some kind of clearance and it hit one of their players and it, you know, luckily didn't go in the net. So I'm not saying it's impossible for another goalkeeper to do it, even David Rea. But in this context, it wasn't even difficult. It wasn't, you know.
I was just going to say, Haribo on Instagram has just made a comment, a good point, sorry. He's put, you know, he wasn't thrust into this. I'm talking about Ramsdale. He wasn't thrust into this as he would have known he's going to have to play in this fixture since the fixture list came out. So basically since Rea signed for us, he would have known and plenty of time to prep for the game. And I completely agree. And it just kind of, yeah, I think it just backs up this point really. But anything else, Aaron, and you wanted to?
No, I think, I don't know. I do think that as a goalkeeper, especially in our system, the way we kind of rely on goalkeepers to be that 11th outfield player, you do need time to just work your way into the game a bit. And you need to get like match fitness and that match sharpness is really important. And I think when you're Ramsdale, you're like, I've just got this one game and I might not play ever again. It might be my last game. I'm still not sure. I think he might still be here next season. But and I think he's just like, crap, I've got to make this one game count. And actually, I think what we probably could have done, and I saw a few people put this on Twitter, is it probably wasn't the worst idea to bring him on against Bournemouth. If we'd give him half an hour against Bournemouth when we were 5 or 6 nil up and just say, look, just play.
Sheffield United.
Yeah, sorry, Sheffield United. And just say, play, have half an hour and just like get those, you know, if you want to go and do your like ultra chill thing that Raj said, like if you want to do that when you're 6-0 up, right? Get it out of your system. Because
I think that the ultra chill thing is it's just his coping mechanism. Do you know what I mean? I don't think he's trying to do it consciously to be a dickhead or anything. Do you know, I'm not saying.
Yeah, that. I don't know. It's fine. But I just think, I don't know. I do think, look, I think it's clear Rea is number one for the, and I think Arteta knew this, right? He knows what Ramsdale brings, but I don't think Rea is number one because Ramsdale makes mistakes. I don't think Ramsdale is a mistake making goalkeeper. I think Rea is number one because he can just do the, like what Arteta said, he does the things that you don't really see. He makes things happen by I don't know what the quote was, but he basically says the things he does means that some things don't happen, right?
Yeah.
And a really good example was that the save he made for, I can't remember the guy's name, the guy with the header. And a lot of people were saying, like Ramsdale makes that save, Rea stops that from happening by just coming out and collecting that cross. I'm not sure, I think that would have been a really good take if Rea does come and take that, but Rea is that confident, his positioning is positioning is aggressive, where he comes out and takes it. And then the counter to that is we've seen Raya, because he's so aggressive with his positioning, just get done for things. At that Porto goal, I think Ramsdale probably saves that Porto goal, right? And we probably go in at Porto and maybe 0-0. The Tony shot, I don't think Raya saves that. So, yeah, I do.
The problem is that the Porto one, so just go back to the Porto one. The Porto one, unfortunately, is also an example of the point that you made about what Arteta says, where ultimately you're right. There is a chance that Ramsdale saves the one that we concede against Porto because of Raya's starting position, because Raya's starting position is a lot higher, and it's just But again, the problem is with that as a hypothetical is how do we know all the things that would have happened in that game that, you know, we could have conceded from that we didn't Reyes, do you know what I mean? So it's too hard to break it down that way.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, the main point I'm saying is like that it was a bad mistake, but yeah, I don't know. I maybe just like him too much. I don't know where I'm just
I hear you about like the fact that we can empathize as a human being as well. Right. But also just, taking a step back, this whole concept of a second goalkeeper, a backup goalkeeper, it's not like this new concept, right? Like, and I think like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, it feels like we're the club where it's the biggest, like minefield, like where it's like the idea of your main goalkeeper getting injured always causes some kind of nutcase situation. Either it's because our backup goalkeeper is like just really crap, or it's actually that they're quite good and they're really upset that they've been dropped and like, you know, the confidence of what, you know, is all like, but other Liverpool have got it at the moment. And I know maybe that's a bad example because Keller is actually like really good, but yeah, I know Ortega stepped in. Ortega like came in for Man City as well. And you know, who knows, Ortega may be the goalkeeper, you know, against us. But other clubs have it all the time. Like this shit happens.
No, but
like,
I think, with number two goalkeepers, they're a special breed of people, right? Like, they are very good at the thing that we've just been saying about Ramsdale, right? Yes. They are very good to say, look, I know I've got to be two games, and I'm probably not going to play again, and I'm okay with that because the number one is better. And I've never really understood that logic. Like, for me, like, the situation we have now, we've got two bloody good goalkeepers. They've both got flaws in their own, kind of their own way. Yeah, logically for me, I'm like, okay, that's a good thing, right? If one goalkeeper's not playing well, you can drop him and bring another one in. But you're right, for us, it just seems to cause us a lot of drama. I think a lot of that's because Ramsdale's English as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Yes.
100%. Yeah. All right, we could probably talk about Ramsdale for ages, but yeah, look, it looks like it more than likely will be his last game for Arsenal. But Aaron, just very quickly, you think he'll still be with us next season? Because I definitely don't.
I think we'd have to, it would take a decent amount of money to come in for us to sell him.
But do you not think that will come in?
No, I don't. I'm not sure who would do it. Like, how much would you sell him for? Like, what is the lowest you would sell him for?
Well, just bear in mind that we gave him a new contract and a part of that would have been to preserve value, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of, look, worst time to sell him, obviously, right? Considering the last thing he's just done for us is that mistake. But I don't know, we paid what, 30-ish for him, did we? 30-35?
Yeah,
I think if we get our money back, I think,
do you think there's many clubs really gonna bid 35 million for him?
Well, I wouldn't sell him for less.
I was gonna say, like, minimum. Yeah, if you're going around the Premier League, no, like, obviously Liverpool, no, City, no, United, no, Chelsea, maybe, I don't know, really, with Chelsea kind of,
yeah, Chelsea
seems to have like three keepers and like, but anyway, yeah, I think
I mean, anyone dropping like 30 million plus on
I guess like the current climate, maybe not, but like Villa paid, how much they pay for us for Martinez, and he was part-time goalkeeper, not part-time, but you know, he wasn't the first choice goalkeeper for us for seasons until he came in when Leno got injured. They paid 20-30 million, was it, something like that? Am I making it up?
Maybe, yeah.
I think Chelsea are a potential option, but I actually think Villa could be an option. If, like, you don't know, Martinez might turn around and go, actually, I want to try something different, you know, because he's at a point in his career as well where he's probably, you know, probably has one big move, I don't know, whatever. Like, and maybe if there's some teams like in Spain or whatever that are keen, yeah, I can see him wanting to do something like that. So, someone like that, yeah, Chelsea. I don't know about what it'll be really interesting to see what Newcastle do in the summer with their manager. Like if Eddie Howe stays, and you know, then you know, is Newcastle an option depending on how they want to play? Because at the end of the day, Ramsdale is a ball playing goalkeeper as well. And so if there's a team that's looking to implement that style of play, then even if they've got a half decent goalkeeper, they may actually think that they need to go with someone like an Aaron Ramsdale. So yeah, it could be interesting. We'll see.
Cool. Let's move on. So I mentioned before, there's a few kind of performances that I wanted to talk about, and I guess specific players. I mean, look, for me, Declan Rice, again, I think, you know, if we talk about Declan Rice, we could be praising him for the next 10 minutes. And we all know what Declan Rice brings to the team. But he was definitely a player that I thought was fantastic, and obviously got the first goal, and definitely a mention for him. I think the other player worth calling out who had a really good game and came up with two assists was Ben White. And I feel like Ben White, it's a really interesting one with Ben White, because kind of gone under the radar a little bit this season. Centre-back converted to a right-back. You wouldn't think it watching him. And I think when I've watched Ben White over the last year and a half, there's been certain periods where I felt like he's not really either been effective, or he's not really helped. This whole kind of Saka conundrum where we see teams doubling up and trebling up on Saka, and you're looking to Ben White, or you're looking to your right back to essentially help him out a bit by, you know, drawing a defender away, making an overlapping run, doing something to help Saka out and give Saka a bit more space. But I think what we've started seeing in the last few weeks, you know, he scored the other day against Sheffield United. Like I said, two assists yesterday, two crosses yesterday, both met with really good headers. But yeah, I just wanted to just mention Ben White, and I think he's just playing very, very well at the moment. I think he's getting some reward from that, like I said, with a couple of assists he got last night.
Yeah. I've always said the one thing stopping Ben White from being like literally one of the Premier League's best right backs is that end product, because he does everything else really well. I think he's actually quite underrated defensively. Going forward, in terms of like positionally his runs, what he does to help Saka kind of do what Saka does is great. The only bit where he's really let himself down a bit is when he gets the ball on the byline, or like on the touch on the byline, or like just kind of in that right wing position, he often just struggles to like make it count.
I really disagree with that, mate, to be honest.
Up until the last couple of weeks, I meant.
No, I think he's always been really good at when he gets to the byline, just that little dink, little chipped ball to the far post or into a really dangerous area. I think the reason that maybe I can see why you'd say that, but I also think that there's been plenty of times where he does get into good positions and he does actually deliver a decent ball. But I guess when we've not had a proper number nine, as it were, or a proper striker presence, we've not like benefited from it. But I think generally his delivery, I wouldn't say he's not a Trent, obviously, right? He's not that kind of, he hasn't got that kind of crossing ability, but I think he puts in some fairly decent crosses from those.
Yeah, I guess he's not getting the numbers is what I meant, right? Like he's not getting the assists. Mm-hmm. Definitely not the goals. I don't expect him to be scoring goals, but just for the, I think the amount of like good possession he has, I do feel like he should be contributing a bit more, and he has the ability to. So to see him do it now is just really good. Just really happy for him, because he just seems like he's always available. He's no nonsense. He just gets on with it, doesn't really cause a fuss. And I think the last couple of games, he's been really, really good. And I hope that form can continue.
He strikes me as one of the leaders in the squad as well. I think, you know, he, there's something about him which exudes a real kind of confidence and a steely sort of mentality. I think he kind of had that even last season, but I think it's sort of shining through now as well. I really do feel for him as well, because if you imagine it, in his time at Arsenal, like you said, Mize, you know, centre-back turned into right-back. He's basically just had to do so many different things in different ways since coming to Arsenal. But in terms of, you know, firstly being a centre back, becoming developing a new partnership, then playing that right back role and developing different partnerships, and then our systems change. You know, so he hasn't even been playing the same way as a right back. There's been times he's been playing just as a kind of more overlapping fullback, and then sometimes as now as a, kind of an inverted role. So he has to do so many different things. I think credit to him. He never strikes me as someone who complains or moans. Like, I never get the impression that he's whinging, you know, about being asked to do something. He just sort of gets on with it. Seems like unfazed. And I think that in every aspect of his game, I feel that I've seen sort of marginal gains over time. And I think that's probably just credit to him and his mentality, but also the coaching, right?
Yeah. And just on another note, I do think actually to almost like as a counterpoint to what Ramsdale was going through, the fact that he's kind of ruled himself out for England just means that the media don't really seem to care about him that much. He's just this guy that, you know, his English right back that plays right back for the team that are currently top of the Premier League. And no one's just making a fuss about him. And I think if he was, if he was obviously playing regularly for England, yeah, they'd be having the debate being like, should he start for England? Should he be in the squad? Blah, blah, blah. But because he's just been like, you know what? I'm just, for whatever reason, I'm not going to be involved in this. That distraction of England is not a conversation. And I think that just helps him massively.
Definitely. All right. Before we move on to, I guess, the winning goal and talking about Kai Havertz a little bit, I can see that we've got quite a few people watching live, looks like on Twitter. So like, thanks guys for tuning in. And look, if you are watching and first time seeing us, please do drop a like, and we're on YouTube. So subscribe on YouTube. Thank you very much. And obviously if you're listening on audio platforms, then I think you can rate us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and things like that. So please do that. We appreciate it. All right, cool. Let's talk about Kai Havertz then. So, well, I mean, look, what do we say about this guy? Because we've been having, between the three of us or four of us, including Nero, we've been having some very, very interesting debates over the last, well, few months, but I guess since he signed for us in the summer, about, you know, did we need him? Has he performed to the level that maybe his price tag sort of dictates? First of all, let's talk about the goal. I personally think that is a fantastic, like, high quality finish, a fantastic header. I was really, really impressed, because to be honest, when it comes into the box, obviously maybe you don't initially see who's heading it. I didn't necessarily realize it was him, and maybe because I've got kind of used to him missing quite a few chances. I think we've seen him miss a few headers since he's joined us, but this was just like a header of, I don't know, like conviction. Didn't think about it. You know, it was just, it felt natural. It felt like a very natural, but very, yeah, like a finish of a striker, obviously, yeah, scoring goals, high in confidence, and someone who, it just felt like he knew that we needed that goal. That was the moment, and he took the moment and won us the game. But yeah, look, what were your thoughts, guys, on Kai Havertz yesterday? Obviously, him scoring the winner and like kind of how he's playing for us at the moment in this number nine role.
I mean, he's scored 4 in 4 now, I think.
Yeah.
Is it 4 in 4? Yeah. So clearly, like, there's an element of confidence that just comes with scoring goals, I suppose, and a confidence I suppose he didn't really seem to have earlier on this season in front of goal. But like you say, I think maybe this header was a real great example of that confidence, because to be honest, he doesn't strike me as that good a header of the ball anyway. Like, I don't think that that's necessarily a proper skill set of his, although he is a big, cool guy. But it was absolutely, I think you nailed it, Mizen, how you mentioned it. It was just, you know, he was kind of like, the ball's going to come in and I might get a chance to head this. And if I do, I'm going to smack it. It's going to go like, it's going to go like a bullet. Like, he did everything right. Do you know what I mean? Like, everything right, from the movement to the jump to the, you know, contact. It was brilliant. So, I mean, whether it's him or anyone else, you need players to step up in these moments. And you think that Kai Havertz, cumulatively over his fairly short career in theory, right, has still had a lot of experience and big moments. And it's what you need, players like that to step up and do. And now our two big signings of the summer came up with two big headers on Saturday, didn't they?
Go on, Aaron, you got anything else?
Yeah, no, I can't I can't disagree with that. I think, look, I think my main conclusion is I don't think I'm smart enough to understand what Kai Havertz is as a footballer. But I think this guy is like a complicated guy. And I do not understand Kai Havertz, because he is like, he's not a midfielder. I know Arteta definitely in the summer when we signed him was quite clear. He said we bought him to bolster our midfield, right? And he's played a lot the first half of the season as a, we call it a number eight. I just didn't think it worked. But then through a combination of Jesus being injured, Eddie Nketiah just not doing it, and just losing whatever kind of hope he had left of making it for Arsenal, we've kind of ended up, whether by accident or by design, like running with Kai Havertz as his number nine, right? And I say number nine, he's never going to be a Haaland, but he's going to be that guy in the middle, usually the furthest up front, making runs behind the defense. And I think his attributes, and obviously his experience, because he's kind of done that a lot at Chelsea, just means that he's really, really useful doing this for us. And look, I think it's actually, the goal scoring is one thing, but actually just his all-round play when he's up there, the way he brings in Odegaard, the way he brings in Saka, the way he brings in Martinelli, he's kind of less often drifting to that left where he was as number eight, but when he's in the middle, he can kind of go both sides now, and it's a bit more even, and it just causes chaos. And I think he's a type of player, especially off the ball, that means that if you've got really good on the ball players, he's a type of guy that if you have him confident, he can really add a lot of value to the team. I do think a lot of it is confidence with him, because for me, and this is the debate we've been having, like the first half of the season, I just think when he was there as number eight, it wasn't working. I think he had some moments, but I think Arteta brought him in with one idea, tried to make it work, and we've ended up in this place now where we've probably got the best out of him and found a position which is like this striker, second striker. I think in reality he's probably a good second striker, and maybe what's worth trying is him behind another traditional number nine. But yeah, I don't get
it. That would just put him at number eight then, wouldn't it?
no, but like a number eight is more like
I don't know,
I know, but in our system that would never work, right? But yeah, if you played like a traditional 4-4-2, I think as a second striker, he might be quite good. But that's kind of my thoughts.
It's interesting because although we've sort of disagreed on some of the stuff about Havertz in the past when we've discussed it, 90% of what you said that I don't actually disagree with personally. I think one of the things I disagree with, which I think is based on just a bigger theory I have of what I think has sort of been going on, is I don't think it's a case that Arteta had a plan for him, has realised that plan doesn't work, and has now moved to something else. I don't actually think that at all. I think that when you look at everything that we're doing at the moment, maybe like since January or whatever, in particular, you know, now it's all seemed to have exploded and everything looks really great. Like, I don't think we can discount how much effort has had to go into getting all our players familiar and competent with doing so many of those little things. And if you cast ourselves back to the beginning of the season, right, when we're playing three at the back, like, I genuinely don't think there was anything in Arteta's mind that said three at the back is how I want to play for the rest of this season. I think he was doing certain things earlier on in the season, playing players and playing combinations in certain ways where he was like, it wasn't that it's not that he didn't think they were effective, but I think that a lot of it was also that I need to get my players to understand how to do certain things in certain situations, to get them comfortable with concepts, ideas, etc., that ultimately they will have to pull on in some shape, way or form when I do want to kind of, you know, roll out, I suppose, plan A, which is maybe what we're seeing now or kind of more so now, if you like. And I think that at the beginning of the season, that was a lot of, you know, Gabriel, for example, I'm sure there was always a plan for him to be a starting player for us. He was just sort of not there at the start while we tried some other things. But I think also with habits, I think this is an example where, like, ultimately, I think even going for the rest of the season, we're still going to see Havertz play in the number eight position many times. It's not that...
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I'm not sure either. Yeah. I don't think we will.
I think you look at how good this is working.
Let me just replay, right, as well. When I say that, what I mean is he's going to spend a lot of time in games, in areas where we believe number eights to traditionally deploy in. Yeah. And so, for example, even if we took what happened over the weekend, I know that, you know, ultimately Havertz scores a goal in the box in the same way that Declan Rice scores a goal where he's in the box. And ultimately you expect strikers to be in those positions. But ultimately when Jesus came in, he did have to drop deeper into a position where he was sort of more familiar with through the kind of earlier parts of the season where we saw him kind of in that number eight territory. He had to do that because Jorginho came off. So there was that space vacated. Now you could argue, you could say, was it only really effective because of the familiarity that he had in taking up those positions in those kind of in systems which Arteta had played earlier? And now we're seeing the fruits of all that labor. And then, I guess, look, my broader point here, right, is I think Havertz just sums up a little bit about, I think people use Havertz as a bit of a target because at the beginning of the season, we didn't really get what Arteta was trying to do at all. When, if you think about it from last season, we played some lovely football. There was almost this great system. And I think all of us went into the summer thinking, do you know what? We need to just improve on our squad and maybe upgrade on some players. But what we're doing works. It's like, you know, this great thing. And then all of a sudden, we kind of come out the back end of the summer and start the season, and we're doing completely different things. And I think everyone's there going, oh, you know, what the fuck? Why are we doing this? Why are we, you know, and why Havertz? Why is he playing in this role? Why is this? Why is that? And I feel like he ended up getting the brunt of actually a lot of people just not understanding what we were trying to do anyway. And I think ultimately he is just this incredibly unique footballer that I can't understand. I agree. I don't get it myself. But you see all these coaches talk so highly of him. I mean, bloody, look, Germany are playing him at a left back. You tell me, like, Germany can't find a better left back than Kai Havertz. And, you know, even Thomas Tuchel, when he was talking about Kai Havertz, he was describing him in all kinds of crazy ways, saying he's a bit like Berbatov about this, a bit like Bergkamp about this. You know, he's saying all this kind of stuff, right? He's clearly this, like, supremely gifted, weird kind of player. And I think we're just seeing now the way that it perhaps could work where, yeah, you know, he is an incredibly capable playing at, you know, for areas further up the pitch. But what maybe makes it so effective is because we're playing these really interesting systems and combos where sometimes he's coming deeper and sometimes someone else is up there and sometimes this isn't, you know, and everyone is so in sync, it feels, you know, they're dummies left, right and center. There's people vacating space and other people kind of coming straight in. It's all like this wonderful, like, kind of cocktail of things that's going on at the moment. I feel like he is just that. He just summarizes the whole journey of the whole team this season.
I think you're giving Arteta a bit too much credit here. Like, as crazy as this sounds, part of me thinks that the way we're playing now, I think we might have just ended up here a bit by accident, because a lot of this is we lost in, like, after the Dubai break, we lost Zinchenko, we lost Jesus, and we needed to find Eddie Nketiah. Clearly, is no longer an option for us up front, and all of a sudden we're like, okay, we need to, like, make this thing work. So what are we going to do? We're going to move Havertz up front because he looks right there. We're going to get Kibiyo at left back and sometimes make him invert, but actually sometimes just leave him a bit more flat and actually get Jorginho there. And I don't know if we would have played this system if Jesus was fit, if Zinchenko was fit. And I think there is a real part of me that wonders, would we have just carried on the same way we were playing were it not for those injuries? And actually what's happened is the way we've set ourselves up now has actually gotten the best out of Kai Havertz. And as a result, we're now getting the best out of Saka with Martinelli, Declan, because now Declan Rice is basically a bit of an eight and we're seeing his attacking qualities because Jorginho is alongside him. That's like, I just wonder if it's just like this really nice coincidence rather than...
We played Kai Havertz, the centre forward, in the Charity Shield.
Yeah.
That was the first game of the season.
Yeah,
as so a it wasn't forward, like that though, was, that's what I mean. As a centre... Oh, no, no, I know. So, but I guess what I'm saying is that's not... I don't think that there was this idea that has all of a sudden just come about now where it's going to, well, we can't play him as a number eight. Actually, maybe we should try him this way. I think they've always had this idea that this is a guy who could play centre forward. He could play in these other spaces. He could play as eight or whatever. And there's going to be games where he's going to have to do both at the same time. I genuinely believe that.
Yeah, yeah, probably. But I just wonder if we bought him with the idea that he's going to be an eight most, like Rice, I think we bought him with the idea that he's going to be a six most of the time, but he can play an eight. And actually, if Rice carries on like this, it's going to be a conversation a bit similar to what we're having with Havertz, to be like, actually, what? Where do we play him long term? And like, my question to you guys is, right, let's say you can go big, right, on like another signing, another position. Would you buy another number eight, like a proper, like a really good? Let's say you had 100 million to go, and I don't know who this guy is, but 100 million to sign the best number eight in the world. That's not Granit Xhaka. would you? And you did that. And then you said you signed the best number nine in the world, or like someone as good. Does someone like Havertz get in the team?
Okay, there's quite a lot there to unpack. But the first, I want to come back to a point you just made before we kind of answered the question, which was about we giving Arteta a bit too much credit. I mean, look, you're right in that maybe where he's now playing in the team has kind of come about as a result of, yeah, Jesus being injured and the example you gave about Kivior, fair enough. But that's football, right? Like that happens. That doesn't just happen with Arsenal. That happens where every team has injuries and then they find solutions with the squad that they've got. So I think, you know, I to be honest, I can see like Raj has probably put it really well where when he's talked about, you know, started him as an eight, but with a view to him playing as a nine, he kind of, yeah, drops in deep and kind of is now familiar with both roles. I feel like there's no way that, considering that Havertz was basically unwanted by Chelsea, it's not really the right term, but there's no way that I think we drop that sort of money on a player like that without having a plan, a very, very clear plan for him. So I feel like, I don't feel like this has just come out of kind of injuries or luck, or we don't have anyone else to play up front, so we'll just play him and see what happens. I think there's definitely been some tactical thinking behind this. Like there has to have been. Even Kivior, for example, like Kivior coming in at left back, okay, fine. There's not really anyone else can play there because Tommy's been injured, Timber's been injured. But equally, Kivior was coming on in certain games. And we were all questioning. I think he started a couple of games as well. I could be wrong, earlier on in the season. Yeah,
the beginning to the new year.
Yeah, and we were like, this guy is like, he's so uncomfortable on that left-hand side. Like, how are we going to manage if Zinchenko gets injured? But obviously, Arteta was trying it out with a view to this, if he ever needed to play him there. But like, on your question, I don't know, man. Like, if you can go and sign the best number eight in the world, yeah, obviously you would, right? Like, if you can go and get the best players in
all right, but okay, position. Forget like the best number. But what do you think we need number eight? We need to sign number eight.
I don't think go on, Raj, go on.
I think it's just too hard to answer the question because then we'll get in the same trap as we did last season, where at the end of the season, you know, we said, okay, you know, we just need a better this, a better that, a better whatever. But ultimately, we don't know what the plan, how we might evolve. And so, like, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with Thomas Partey. We don't, you know, I mean, that's another example, right? Just to kind of, in a roundabout way of kind of answering your question somewhat, right? But assuming everyone was fit, obviously we don't, you know, you're never going to have everyone fit. But at the beginning of the season, actually, Thomas Partey was fit and Havertz was fit and Rice was fit and whatever. Like, Thomas Partey was playing a right back. That wasn't going to be like the end game. Like, I'm sure
that was a weird start. That was a weird time.
Don't you think similarly that could have been around this? It could have been around getting players familiar with these different kind of areas or whatever. And actually, I can certainly see that there would have been a time where Thomas Partey would play with Declan Rice in the centre of midfield, and maybe Kai Havertz, you know, plays up top. I don't know. Anyway, point is, like, I think it's just too hard. Like, what I would say, just to entertain your question, just for the sake of it, if we assume that everything stays the way it is, let's just say, right, and we have a certain amount of predictability as to how we will be next season, then I do think that actually a number eight is a really important signing for us, partly because we've got an aging backup midfield, if you like, right? Like, you know, Jorginho's getting old, and then he's like, whatever, is going to be out, whatever. Partey, who knows, like, whatever. We may even get rid of him because we can't trust him, whatever, on with his fitness. So, like, I do think it's important. But then there will be this argument again to say, well, actually, is Declan Rice, should Declan Rice be the main number eight, and should we be signing a defensive midfielder? So I don't know. I really don't know. And then the centre forward one, I think, is an even more interesting one, because I genuinely don't think that unless there's someone that we think can come in and be an Erling Haaland level of centre forward, like, I think there's an argument to say, just don't, because if you sign a proper centre forward, you have to change the system. Like, this system doesn't work. Well, like, do you know what I mean? You need a Havertz type, like, who's going to have to do crazy, weird things, unless you just get, like, an Erling Haaland type person and change it. And I'm just not convinced there's someone out there who can do that.
I think they might look at a centre forward, and it might not be a blockbuster Erling Haaland type of signing if they feel like we just can't rely on Jesus in that position, like, even as a squad player, and we need to go and buy a squad striker. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it'll be like an Julian Alvarez type of player. I know he's not. I know he's basically starting every week for City, but that's type of guy who I think is actually Julian. I think he's a really, really good player, by the way. But a type of player who can just come in and, like, you can play him up front. You can maybe play him like a I think the thing is, I think Arteta just wants versatile players, and I think if you are versatile and you can play 2-3 positions, then Arteta just rates you even more highly. And I think that really was, like you said, Bryce, the attraction for Havertz. And I think maybe he just thinks, hey, look, I'm going to try this guy out as an eight, and it might not work, but then I can try him out as a nine. And if that doesn't work, I can try him out as a left back. And I don't think he really looks for, like, players who are 10 out of 10 in their position. I think he would rather have a player who can give you an 8 or 9 out of 10 in 2 or 3 positions than a Haaland who can give you a 10 out of 10 up front, but then be useless to you everywhere else in the pitch.
I think the other thing, though, is I think he could therefore look at it and go, maybe it's worth taking a punt on or making an investment in a young striker. So even if it is quite a big investment, someone where there isn't that pressure to come in and kind of adapt a system around initially, someone who... I think there might be an element at Arsenal where they're a little bit worried that there's a few other teams who have kind of isolated a young centre forward who could be their centre forward for sort of many years, and then suddenly the market gets very difficult to navigate if you did need someone. So I think they might have even looked at Højlund and how he's doing at United and thought, actually, that's a bit annoying. Maybe that's someone who, you know, might have been quite good for us to sort of tie down. So I wonder if they're looking at people like Evan Ferguson and think, maybe he's the one, maybe someone like that who might cost a lot of money, but, you know, tie him down, get him used to the club, no pressure. And then maybe over time you evolve a system which really can get a lot out of him.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I guess it goes back to my point on habits, right? Which is, if you have a nine and you have an eight, like, where does habits fit into this? Like, fair enough, he could be this, like, everyone, maybe you could say everyone's going to be a squad player at this rate, right? We're going to have 15, 16 really good players. And maybe that's what, like, you look at Grealish, right? £100 million player, starts one in three now for Man City.
And he's injured a lot as well, though.
Yeah, and maybe you just say, actually, we just sign loads of good players because that's what it is. And actually, you know, my beef with Havertz was that, you know, £60 million, £300k a week. That's our third most expensive signing of all time, probably our highest paid player. You've got to be really, really sure, like, what you're going to do with that, because we're not a club with unlimited money. And I just felt like for the first half of the season, we weren't sure. And it looks like we're a bit more sure now, and I hope this works out, because, like I said, when you go big on a player like that, it has to work basically for us to do well. We can't afford a £60 million miss. We can't afford another Nicolas Pepe. I'm not saying Havertz is going to be a Pepe, but we can't get someone like that wrong.
Yeah.
Well, he scored again. 8 goals this season. He's definitely doing the business at the moment. We got a question from a certain Naroshan. Remember him, guys? cheers for joining, Nero. It's nice of you to join us, mate. As a watcher. So if both fit, who would you choose to lead the line, Jesus or Havertz? Well, I'll just give my thoughts really quickly. I mean, look, to be honest, I think it depends on the opposition. Going to be very, very interesting to see what we do on Tuesday. And we're going to talk about Tuesday in a minute. But I think for now, like, if you're asking me to pick one, I would say you go with Havertz. I for all the reasons that we've talked about, I think it's just working really, really well. You don't generally drop a striker that's in form and scoring goals. And I think... Yeah, I think for those reasons, pretty much, and like without kind of going over the same points that you guys made about why he's doing so well. What do you guys reckon?
I was gonna say I'd probably go with Havertz.
What?
Honestly, yeah, no, because I think this system just works, man. I would like, like I said, I don't think Jesus and Zinchenko get back into this team. Jesus is an interesting one. I'm not convinced Gabriel Jesus is actually a striker. I think he might at some, if we do sign a number 9, I think he might get more minutes as a winger or a wide player for us rather than a striker. And I think that might just work for everyone. I can see him being like the rotational option. Either Saka plays or Jesus plays. But having said that, I think Jesus in the Champions League is a different beast. He's just looked on it against like European opposition. And I think there's something to be said for like his level of experience. Not that Havertz is inexperienced in the Champions League, but he's just streetwise. He knows how to like deal with these like South American flavored teams. And maybe for Porto specifically, if they're fit, I might actually lean towards Jesus.
But he's got, I mean, just on Porto, before we kind of go into the preview of Porto, he's, I guess on that point specifically, he's got a decision to make because it's probably going to be Trossard or Jesus. I think he still sticks with Havertz up front. Assuming Martinelli's not fit. And I would agree. I think you go with Havertz. I think you go with Jesus on the left.
Jesus on the left?
I would play him on the left. I'm not sure he would.
On Tuesday, you would do that.
I would want, like you said, I would want Jesus in a Champions League game. And I think, like we've all said it before, right? He just creates like this craziness, this havoc. And he does have goals in him. And yeah, I don't know. I wasn't overly impressed with how Trossard played the other day, and we're going to face a very similar kind of setup again. Obviously Porto are going to come with a very, very low block, a very deep block, and I think I can see Jesus causing more problems in general on that side and coming inside as well, and maybe switching with Havertz, like I could see him causing a lot more problems to that Porto defense than Trossard will. I feel like Trossard does go not missing, but there are games where he,
I agree with you,
just doesn't, yeah, do you know what I mean? Whereas Jesus doesn't do that. He doesn't, you know, he's just involved in everything. And I think we're going to need that on Tuesday.
I think there's a chance that Jesus plays up front and Havertz plays in midfield. As in, I hate using those terms now, but I think there's a chance that Jorginho doesn't play and Havertz plays and Jesus plays.
Interesting. Why do you think Jorginho might not play?
Maybe just because it's home, and obviously we need goals. We're going to need to score two more than them, right? Well, yeah, I mean, to go through, we're going to score two more, right? So, like, so yeah, I think that I think there's a chance that as a result that happens, and also partly because of some of the things that we've discussed. So I totally agree with your point about Jesus in the Champions League games. That experience is so streetwise. I love that. But I think that there's also definitely an argument to say, like, you know, if you've got a player who scored 4 goals in 4 games, you play them. I think Havertz should play. So yeah, I wonder if that is a possibility. But I hadn't actually considered the idea of Jesus playing left wing over Trossard. I could see that. The only I know that he's played on the right wing for us, and I know he's played on the right wing for City. Has he played on the left for us before? Like, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure he has, to be honest. Might have been the odd game, but I can't think of any just like any specific moments or games, to be honest. No, but I think of who's available, I think that's your best front three, personally. Yeah. And I think if he is fit now, like he came on for a bit yesterday, I think if he is fit now, I'd want to see him start. Equally, I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, look, him coming off the bench is definitely no. That's a great option to come off the bench if it's still 0-0 or we're struggling or whatever. Like, and we need a goal. I mean, look, I wanted to talk about the massive game today, but we may as well just sort of round off on Porto on Tuesday now that we're talking about it. Like, it's literally 2 days away. So it's come around very, very quickly from the game that we had last night. Not very much kind of rest time, I guess, for the team. But like, yeah, like how are you guys feeling about Tuesday night? I'm already starting to feel quite nervous. Stevie from the Beyond the Hashtag podcast has put in a comment. Arteta's got me feeling like I'm going to go to war on Tuesday, never mind the players. And those nerves have already started creeping in for me. I'm sure they have for you guys as well. And it is going to be, I mean, it's going to be a really good atmosphere because we're going to have to really kind of back the team and get the Emirates into a cauldron. It's got to be one of those European nights. We're going to need that. The players are going to need that, but it's going to be so nervous. It's going to be so, so nervous. Like I'm already bricking it a little bit, but yeah. How are you guys feeling, Aaron?
Yeah, man, this is a big, big game. Like when we got top four last season, I know we were aiming for much more, but I think we confirmed top four and we're like, oh, we're back in the Champions League. You then have the group stage, and the group stage nowadays is a bit of a formality. And there was a hype about that first game at home in the Champions League. But really, what you look forward to is your first knockout game at home. Yeah, this is the big one, right? And we haven't had one of these for a long, long time. Look, this team... It would be a travesty, like for this team, if we didn't go through. Like sometimes I like try to like cushion the blow, but if this team doesn't go through, it would just be not like I wouldn't be angry. Well, depending on what happens, I might be angry. but I just think from a footballing perspective, right now we are one of the best teams in Europe. Like, we're playing some of the best football in Europe. We're up there. We're on top. No, like we're first in the Premier League, above two of the best teams in Europe over the last 5, 6, 7 years, right? And if we went out to Porto at home in the round of 16, I just think it would be such a shame. So yeah, there's going to be pressure, man. There's going to be pressure. This is a big pressure, high pressure game where you've got to turn around a 1-0 defeat. Got to go there. They've got to come to us, and we've got to make it difficult. Like we, the three of us, have like got responsibility as fans in the ground to make it difficult. And then we've just got to hope that the players turn up. We've got to get the selection right. The tactics have got to be right. We've got to hope that the referee isn't an idiot and like actually lets us play our game. But the fact that I'm saying like it would be a massive travesty if we went out would just means that like. Logically, like I think we're so much better than them, but you've got to show up because these European games are different, and these players don't have that experience.
So it's probably the biggest game the Emirates has had since the post Wenger era, right?
Yeah,
it's the first Champions League knockout home game. Yeah, so I mean. It's huge. It's such a big game. And I think because of the fact we're in a title race and, you know, we've been quite focused on the Premier League games, I think it's sort of gone on the radar, you know, that all of a sudden on Tuesday we're playing Porto at home and, you know, it's such a massive game. But, like, you know, as fans, as players, if you don't get up for these games, like, I mean, what's the point, right? Like, and I really think that's going to make a massive difference. I don't know. Like I really struggle to see a world where we don't come out with just ultra intensity and focus. I'll be very surprised if we're not winning by halftime. Like, very surprised.
I wanted to ask you guys, so do you feel like this is a game, despite kind of like, you know, you guys have built it up really well, where you've talked about the kind of magnitude of it and the significance of it. But do you feel like this is a game that if Arsenal turn up, we go and win? And the only reason I ask that is because obviously Porto, I guess, employed certain tactics to get the win against us a few weeks ago. And they now have a lead to protect. And Arsenal have been scoring goals for fun in the last few games, last couple of months. And so we know that we can score goals. But equally, we went there and we were flat. You know, it was flat and it didn't really click for whatever reason. I guess the question I wanted to, and sorry, also to add to that, I think since Porto have played us, they've been putting goals, they've been scoring a lot of goals. They've been in good form. So do you think this ultimately just comes down to, like, if Arsenal turn up and the players turn up and they kind of take the challenge on and we take the game to Porto, we win? Because it sounds like, Raj, you're pretty confident that we should be doing that by half time and should be up by half time.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I'd be more worried that, say if we're up at half time, which I think we will be, it's that second half, which I think then gets really funny, right? Like, because the moment, let's say we're 2-0 up, let's just say. If Porto get a goal, like, then I think it becomes really difficult. Then I think the nerves get kick in and then everyone gets shaken. Then all that confidence, all that kind of buzz that I think the players will have, I think will just turn to, oh my God, like, this is scary. And that's what I'm a little bit worried about. In some ways, you know, you sort of think if we go a goal down, I'm not saying I'd like us to go down, but if we went a goal down, like, early on or whatever, and then had time to sort of build back momentum and whatever, and then, you know, with that on our side, I wonder if that would be a better sequence. Obviously, you know, I wouldn't want that because obviously, you know, it's, you don't want us to concede at all. But so I'm not necessarily saying I'm super confident of the end result, but it would be so disappointing just to go by Aaron and said, like, it would be so disappointing. This team deserves to be, if we deserve to go through, we'll go through. Do you know what I mean? Like, and, you know, we have to show it. But I'd love to see this team against one of the European big boys in the next round. I'd love to get a Real Madrid or a Bayern Munich. I'm not saying that because I'm confident that we'll beat everyone, but, like, I'd love to see us just against.
You want to see where we're at, right? Like, we know where we're at in the Premier League. We're up there and we're competing and we're going toe to toe. But I agree, Champions League is a different beast, and obviously, like, the spectacle and us getting to go to the game and everything would just be unreal. But no, that's all good. And Niro's just put in another question here. If it gets it, mate, I don't know. I mean, look, I don't, like, don't worry about that. Don't worry about being confident about the penalties. I don't know if we're, like, half the fan base is going to make it to penalties if it goes to that, because I think half of them are going to be on the floor. My God. But yeah, would you be confident if this game goes to penalties? Me personally, I would. Yeah. At home, I think we've got pretty solid penalty takers. When I think of players like, obviously, Saka, Erdegaard, I think Havertz has got a good record generally. Jorginho, kind of expert penalty taker. Declan Rice, would I see him take one? Maybe, you know, Jesus, Trossard. Like, there's loads of players that I think I'd be pretty confident. I think it comes just more down to nerve, doesn't it, than anything else on the night.
Yeah, I'd back Raya to save a few as well. Because he saved one against West Ham, right?
Yeah.
When they beat us. Was that in the league? Yeah. No, that was at home.
That was at home, the league. That would have been 3-0 if he didn't save that.
When Rice gave away that penalty.
Yeah.
But you're right. I think, penalties would be, I don't think I could watch that. But I think what you said, Raj, is quite interesting, which is actually, I think we should just go for it at the start, because even if we concede a goal, I'd back us to at least beat Porto 2-1 over 90 minutes at home. And then just take it to extra time and penalties, and then we're still at home and the crowd will still be up for it. So actually, if we just try and, like, get an early goal and then try and get another one, and
and then another one.
Yeah. This is like elite level tactics.
Psych Arteta, get Aaron.
But, like,
to the team talk, guys. We score one. And then two.
Yeah. What I meant is, like, just be really aggressive from the start, right? Yeah. Don't, like, just don't play with fear of conceding, because even if we concede, I would still back us to score two at home. And yeah, oh man, I'm nervous thinking about it, but I think it could be a really special night.
Let's just do predictions. I wanted to talk about Liverpool City really quickly before we wrap up. But predictions, Raj, for Tuesday night, on the night, what are you going for?
I'm going to be bold and brash and go for a 3-0.
Aaron?
I think a nervy 2-0.
I was thinking 2-0 as well, but I think it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be nervy. Yeah, 2-0 is a bit of a dangerous scoreline when you're 1-0 down from the first leg. But yeah, I'll go 2-0 as well. All right, cool. Boys, before we wrap up, obviously we've pushed over an hour, so just make this one quick, I guess. But yeah, look, there's a huge game today. I guess we got the result we wanted, to be honest. I'm pretty happy with a draw. I think it doesn't really... Raj, you sent a really interesting graphic in our WhatsApp group earlier, and I haven't got it to look at, to be fair, to quote it. But, you know, it showed the percentage chance of each team winning the league depending on the result of today's game. And I obviously was mainly focused on what impact it would have on the Arsenal's chances of winning the league, and it didn't really vary that much. So I guess we did our job yesterday, and we could enjoy today. But look, any takeaways really from the game today and significance of the game on the title race?
Look, I think my main takeaway here is we're still really early. I think, you know, after the international break, which is coming up soon, we've got City away. Then after that, I think it will feel like the run-in, like the real run-in, right? Where I know Sky have already started doing their graphics and all that with all the fixtures, but there's a lot of football still to be played. I think overall, I still do think City are the stronger team. Like you said, they've been there, done that. But I don't know, man. Liverpool, I think, look, you've got to really rate Liverpool, man. Like the team they put out today, to get a point against City is really impressive. But it also then just gives me a lot of confidence to say maybe City aren't all that anymore. And maybe there's just a few little weaknesses creeping in there, and maybe you can get at their defence. And maybe Haaland, like, defenders have found a way to just keep him quiet. And actually, you just hope that maybe De Bruyne isn't on it. Like, on their day, De Bruyne and Haaland can rip you apart, and they have ripped us apart in the past, right? I remember away at the Etihad last time, they just had a lot of fun where they just went long.
I love the Emirates.
And yeah, well, they just went long ball, and they just said, De Bruyne, do your thing. And Haaland, go, this guy called Rob Holding over there, he can't defend. Just go and deal with, like, just go and stay next to him. But yeah, no, mate, I think it's just I'm just, like, in awe that, like, for so long, I don't want to get, like, too emotional, but I did not think I would see Arsenal in a title race. I always thought, like, the money that is going on in this league, the things City are doing, and fair play to Liverpool, but Liverpool have also spent big and have, you know, have gone big. And
You're not allowed to say that.
I know. But Liverpool spent a lot of money. And I'm not saying we haven't. Like, we're not Luton, okay? But I didn't think you've got to spend the money, and you've got to spend it well, and then you've got to have a manager that puts it all together and turns it around on the pitch. And we're doing that at the moment. And to just the fact that we're there, the fact that our name and Arsenal Football Club is, and Arteta's head is on there next to Klopp and next to Guardiola's heads is good. Like, it's just good. I don't know, man. I predicted at the start of the season that we'd win it. The more real a possibility it becomes, the more nervous I get, because we do have some really hard fixtures. I was reading that Chelsea, the Chelsea game at home, could be rearranged to the final midweek.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, so we could have two home games, which would be quite nice. I think we'd have Chelsea at home, then Everton at home. Which, I mean, if we're still in it, then
yeah,
probably fancy us, right?
Yeah.
But then, you know, we've still got to go to Old Trafford, still got to go to Spurs. You know, Spurs won 4-0 today. So I think there's a long way to go. I have no idea.
There's a lot of football. To be honest, you know, the games that need to be rescheduled for us, Chelsea. But for Liverpool and City, those are potentially sort of trickiest fixtures as well for them, because Liverpool have got the Merseyside derby that has to be rearranged. So, like, I know it's Everton, but away at Everton, like in the Merseyside derby, that, you know, that's not going to be easy. And City away at Brighton, Joe and Brian on their day, I know, like, you know, they've been a bit patchy at times, but...
Carragher made a really good point after, I think it must have been post-match, where they were sort of trying to do their predictions on who's going to win the league, and he basically said, look, you know, it doesn't just, and they pulled up the remaining Premier League fixtures for each team, and, you know, City's run, I think the last five or six games, looks fairly straightforward for them. But Carragher made the point, look, it isn't necessarily about who you've got, it's what are the games that you have around those other games. And if City progress in the Champions League and Liverpool progress in Europe, they both might progress in the FA Cup. They could play each other in the FA Cup. You know, then you have those games to focus on, and then it becomes about recovery and when do those games get penciled in, and then rearranging Premier League games. All of those factors come in. So, you know, it's not as straightforward as just looking at who has everyone got in the last 10 games. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting.
The one thing I will say is I really, really hope we keep our players fit. Just so I can say that if we don't win it,
I love how you just come out with groundbreaking stuff, though. it's like match strategy, score one, then two. And also, I really hope we keep our players fit.
No, bear with me on this one. I'm making a semi-serious point. Just because, like, I don't want the what-ifs of last season. But if we lose it, if we finish third, I want it because, like, City and Liverpool just did something incredible and won all of their last games. And we drew one game, we might have drawn away at Spurs or drawn away at United or something. I've just done one dumb thing here and there, which is normal, right? What I don't want is for us to lose two players and just think, oh, what if we had kept them fit? What if we had a different backup? What if we did this? Because I'm telling you, I'm still convinced if Saliba was fit, we would have won the league last season. And I don't want to be thinking that this season. I want them to beat us and beat us properly. I want them to beat us at our best rather than beat us with, like, injuries and like City refereeing controversies and stuff like that.
Right. I think that's a really good point to wrap up. Look, thank you, everyone who's dropped a question or a comment. I think we've had, like I said before, quite a few people watching this live on Twitter. So thanks for tuning in there. Please do drop us a like if you haven't already. We very, very much appreciate the support. Aaron and Rog, I guess we'll see each other on Tuesday night. Tuesday. It's going to be big. It's going to be big.
Big one.
All right, boys. Nice one. Thanks for the chat. Take it easy.
See you later. Take care. Thanks.